Welcome to the July 13th edition of the In the Now Show. This is Slip Mode in the House coming to you along with...
VR is saying let's roll.
Just JP.
Awesome. JP?
I'm JP now.
You're JP? Okay. All right.
Well, I thought I knew you, but I guess not. I think we're going to have issues.
I'm JP. I'm taking over the old JP.
Okay. JP now used to be... Dimitri from our previous shows. If you guys have gone back in the archives and looked at the older shows, maybe you're a long-time listener. Anyways, we have a great, great, amazing show for you. And if you haven't already noticed by the special effects, we added something a little new to the show. And we're going to demonstrate it here just shortly. Take it away for us, VR. And that was DJ VR coming at you. We have this
in the house.
In the house. We have this neat piece of equipment. It's called an AirFX, and it's actually memes, and she's letting us use it. Check out, see what it's what we can do with it. But I definitely I'm into it. It's cool. You didn't notice the opening song there is actually a song for OpenBSD 3.0. Ever since 3.0, they've been coming out with music for each release, and that was one of them. So we're going to move on. We have a lot of stories, and the first one we're going to talk about is the lure of data. Is it addictive?
Oh, yeah. I have to slam it 3-4 times a day. I am such a data junkie.
All right, well, here's a actual study here. Mr. Lax, a 44-year-old venture capitalist, is sitting in front of an executives conference at a hotel near Los Angeles. But he's not all there. Out of one ear, he listens to a live presentation about cable television technology. Simultaneously, he surfs the net on a laptop with a wireless connection while occasionally checking his mobile device, part phone, part pager, part internet gadget for email. Mr. Lawflex from Boston has paid $2,000 to attend the conference called Vortex. Basically, we're describing what you could be doing, you know, what this really entails. And a lot of people are doing it nowadays. But he cannot unwire himself. Oh, there we go. Let me get back to that. He cannot wire himself long enough to give presenters his complete focus. If he did, he would face a fate worse than the lack of productivity. He would become bored.
Oh, darn.
It's hard to concentrate on one thing, he said, adding, I think I have a condition. The ubiquity of the technology in the lives of executives, other business people, and consumers has created a subculture on the always-on and brewing tension between productivity and freneticism. For all the efficiency gains that are seemingly provides, the constant stream of data can interrupt not just dinner and family time, but also meetings and creative time. And it can provide a very tough, prove to be very tough to turn off. Sorry for my reading. I'm getting over so many things that we've talked about earlier.
You must be checking your email right now, too.
I can't take all the info I've been pulling in the last few minutes.
I'm reading my email right now.
The speed demons say that they will fall behind if they disconnect, but they also acknowledge feeling something much more powerful. They are compulsively drawn to the constant stimuli provided by incoming data. Call it OCD, Online Compulsive Disorder. The pair have their own term for this condition, pseudo-attention deficit disorder. Its sufferers do not actually have ADD, but influenced by technology and the pace of modern life, have developed shorter attention spans. They become frustrated with long-term projects, thrives on the stress of constant fixes on information, and physically crave the bursts of stimulation for checking for email or voicemail, and answering the phone. It's like a dopamine squirt to be connected, said Dr. Rady, who compares the sensations created by constantly being wired into those of narcotics, a hit of pleasure, stimulation, and escape. It takes the same pathway as our drugs of abuse and pleasure. It's addiction, he says, adding that some people cannot deal with the downtime or quiet moments. Without it, we are in withdrawal. How many people suffer from that?
Actually, almost everybody does.
Yeah, nowadays. I mean, I read that article. I thought the whole thing was mine. You know?
Yeah. We are so, you know, it's part of the human condition to be wanting to have, you know, constant interactions. Well, maybe not constant, but then we get used to it because you know, the more interaction that we have, the less we look within ourselves for our own stimuli. And so it becomes a great, you know, gaping void inside that we need even more stimuli to avoid it. And then we don't even realize that we're avoiding it, and so it becomes that we need even more and more and more, just to stay okay.
Yeah, it's you know, I guess I could tell you that's kind of I thought of when it comes to video games and the quality of video games nowadays. It seems like it's just, you know, a totally quick rush. Like Quake's an older game, but games that are just shoot 'em up games go in instant success, instant happiness when you kill the person or a lot of people are into that too as well, and I think that's another thing. People don't have the time to a lot of people are not into role playing games. You'll see that they don't want to play them because it takes a long time to play the game, and they just want to go in and get a quick fix and get their happiness and get out.
That's right.
It's pretty interesting
because I actually was playing some video games a couple days ago, and so and I felt myself just getting sucked into it. I'm starting to obsess about it, so I've had to completely cut myself off. I've even turned off my cell phone. I've completely cut myself off from most technology unless I absolutely have to, so I can get back to my normal state of functioning.
Yeah, it definitely could be. When I was younger, I played a lot of games, but now it's just plus with role playing games now, they're just getting so long, and I really don't have the time to play it, and it's also like I feel like I've wasted so much time in sitting there playing it. You know, Grand Theft Auto is like the worst thing in the world. You know, people spend weeks all day long, adults, kids, and they're just sucked into the game, and it's just that's when it's not healthy.
That's like a 3-week bender right there. There should be rehab for that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're going to move on because we have so many stories. We're going to have a whole SCO segment like we've had in previous stories. There's actually a small Microsoft segment. These are just miscellaneous stories. One right here is a company called Reasoning, which is a lead provider of automated software inspection services, announced that the results of a study that the company conducted in which inspected the code of the Apache open source web server version 2.1, Reasoning found that the Apache open source server had similar defect density compared to the average defect density of several commercial equivalents. It's basically talking about the quality of the code. In its most recent study, Reasoning found 31 software defects in 58,944 lines of code, the Apache web server. The defect density of the Apache code inspected was 0.53 per 1,000 lines of code, while the commercial average defect density was 0.51 per 1,000 lines of code. So the reason I bring this up is just we're talking more about the validity of open source and the quality of the products. I think that it said that this company was a Microsoft-owned company. They're also the one that analyzed, not Microsoft-owned, but supported company. They also were the ones that analyzed the TCP stack for Linux and did their report on that. So I don't know if that's just more propaganda or if it's the truth. I don't know. There's a lot of huge sites out there running it. It's doing well for them, and they're not installing Microsoft. So
well, the thing with open source is that the longer it's used and it's and there's a
tested and
yeah, one people are using it and creating new things for it and fixing it, that fault density will decrease.
Definitely.
Or there'll be more patches for it and the fixes and all that. So those things might stay there, but it'll function overall better over the long term.
JP, you guys use that, right?
Yeah.
And what's your average monthly hits?
You know, I have no clue.
Okay. But it's got to be. It's a lot, right?
Yeah, a lot of people using it.
And it runs well for you guys. And you chose to use Apache over a Microsoft server.
Well, we never even considered Microsoft because, you know, it's slow. But we were considering, I can't remember. There's another
Zeus?
One. Zeus. We actually paid for that. And we had so many problems because we had to change, like, IP addresses and change computers, and the license was, like, very specific. So we ended up not using that because we changed so many times that we had to keep getting a new license. It would take, like, 2 weeks to get the license, and so we just went back to Apache.
All right.
But Zeus is supposed to be better, and it's actually closed. It's, you know, it's not just open source, as far as I know.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to put that out there, just as all the sides of the Linux and the operating systems. Who knows? That's it. All right. And then this is another story about the Japanese government opts for Linux for their payroll system. Computer giant Fujitsu said on Wednesday, which is basically back on early July, IBM Japan and Oki Electronic Industry Company have won a 188 million yen, which is $1.59 million contract, to design a Japanese government payroll computer system. Fujitsu, Japan's top computer maker, said the contract from the National Personnel Authority is for a system to manage personnel and payroll information of about 800,000 government employees. Until now, the Japanese government has relied on expensive, large-scale computers for its backbone. The new system, using lower-priced advanced servers and personal computers, is yet to half the network's operating cost to around 350 billion yen a year. So,
that's a significant savings.
Yeah. So that's the Linux news as far as it's moving out there and getting.
No, I was actually reading an article today in the Republic that there's actually a guy that I think he's from Arizona that has renounced his U.S. citizenship and acquired Japanese
I heard
citizenship.
About that.
Yeah, citizenship, and now he's being this civil rights advocate because there's a lot of places that will not serve him because he's a foreigner. So they have this whole culture of racism, well, actually ethnocentrism,
Does he come and say, I'm a foreigner? They're like, oh, get out of here, buddy. You're not. I don't understand that.
Oh, no. He's like a 6-foot white guy. And so he sticks out like a sore thumb. And because only, was it 0.15% of the entire population of Japan.
He went to Japan.
He's a Japanese citizen.
Oh, I thought. Oh,
he renounced his American citizenship.
So he left,
picked up.
Oh, yeah, he left America.
Yeah.
I thought he was still here for some
reason. Oh, no, that'd be weird.
Yeah.
And that he can't go into bathhouses and stuff like that, and he's like suing all these people, and that they won't serve him. It's really kind of neat.
That's weird.
Wow. Well, I hope he enjoys it over there.
Yeah. I thought that was a nifty little tidbit.
I'd like to go over there, though.
Here is this is an interesting story. I just talk about everything, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Noise from a cell phone can chase mosquitoes away. South Korean's largest mobile phone operator said Thursday, they always say that, but it's basically July 10th, early July, that would offer cell phone users a new noise service that would repel mosquitoes.
Oh, yeah.
SK Telecom company said subscribers can pay 3,000 won, which is a lot of money. No, it's actually $2.50, to download a sound wave that is inaudible to human ears but annoys mosquitoes within a range of 3 feet. Customers can play the sound by hitting a few buttons on their mobile phones.
The downside to that is it attracts very vicious big dogs that love to kill humans.
Well, so you can have that on your hip, and it repels it for 3 feet, and then the top of your head and your ankles get bitten.
And your battery goes low right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus you get cancer on your hip.
On your hip.
Oh, man. Sir, you have cancer on your hip. Damn, cell phone.
See, that's what I'm waiting for, is to actually get cancer on my hip, and then... Yeah, then it'll be proof that they cause tumors.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Then they'll say, well, at least you don't have mosquito bites.
All these trade-offs. You have to evaluate things. Okay, we talked about this a little bit last show, I believe. It's basically about the RIAA and how they're trying to, you know, get at the people that are swapping music. The Recording Industry Association of America has announced on June 25th that it will start tracking down and suing users of file-sharing programs as yet to spook people, says developers of these applications. Either way, the numbers of these users seem to have grown last week. Anytime you get media attention, you get people interested, and then they try it out. So it's kind of counterproductive in that sense. The recording industry should lobby for special taxes. This is what the article is saying. One of the guys should special taxes on CD burners and internet access as a way to recoup losses incurred from file sharing, and an idea that Grokers Rosso also supports. I honestly don't know who that is. Rosso was in Washington recently to talk to lobbyists about forming a coalition of file sharing firms. The RIAA has not expressed interest in that idea. As for any recent increase in file sharing traffic, the RIAA spokeswoman Amy Weiss said the organization would not discuss it.
You know what I would really, really like to see, and I can't believe or I haven't heard of it yet, is having a personal, you know, for your private use file sharing license. You go, you know, pay what, like $50 a year, and you can, you know, so they get their little bit, you get to, you know, to trade swap files. And
pretty good idea too.
And you're done?
Yeah, basically. Okay. That was the idea.
JP, you guys should probably not talk about this anymore, because we could make $1 billion.
Well, we can, because it's copyrighted, because it's on, you know.
Yeah, it's actually on
I
here.
Actually put copyright.
It's ours.
Yeah, as long as it's ours, it's ours.
I don't want to change my name to Trash Can, though.
You are now Trash Can.
I'm Trash Can.
Trash Can.
Your idea was...
Welcome, Trash Can. We'll pummel you later.
All right.
We're actually going to go...
I burn things.
We're actually going to go dumpster diving, and you're going to be our first victim.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, your idea, which goes perfectly with what VR is saying.
It's basically, just like XM, you get a box, just like XM Radio, you get a box, except you can... the box will connect to... a server through the internet,
because this
satellite
would be the medium that the licensing would use.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would download. You could download any MP3 you want on this little hard drive that's 6 gigs or so, and you can listen to any song you want through that little box, through that player. You can connect it to your stereo system or connect it to your computer, and you just pay monthly, just like, you know, XM. Just like you just you're just not able to easily transport, you know, like burn it to a CD or whatever. It just always comes from that box.
Okay.
Well, even if you could burn it to a CD, then it's just a little bit more work.
Yeah, it's just a little more.
Yeah, that's...
But at least they're getting cash at some point.
Yeah, that they're not a complete loss.
This is just something to add.
Because people are going to do this no matter what. And so, you know, that they're going to, you know, if they pay a little bit of a service fee, I think most people would do it.
Well, I had read this while I was sitting down, and I saw these stack of magazines at this place. And it said, it was a Business Week, and it said on it, how is the movie biz, I'm going to try to get this right, how is the movie biz going to deal with the mass amount of piracy that the music industry, that has crippled the music industry? They used the word crippled.
Crippled.
Who the hell is crippled, dude?
No, I don't think so. I think there's still one of the biggest businesses out there.
Yeah. Yeah, that I saw that, and I refused from that point on to ever read Business Week.
The CEOs had to get rid of their yacht, so that became crippled. They crippled me.
Oh. Actually, they didn't get to buy the submarine to docks with the yacht, but they got the yacht.
No, they didn't get to buy the MiG. There's actually a company now that has bought like 300 MiGs from the former Soviet Union, and now is selling them for private use. So
sweet.
They didn't get to buy the Megan, so now
that's
they're
terrible.
I know, because they can't go 450 miles per hour.
Can I change my name to MiG?
You can change it whatever you want, but you only can change it one more time, and that's it.
Yeah, you know, I'm really digging Trash Can.
Yeah, we're staying with Trash Can.
You don't like MiG?
No.
MiG is too much like a name anyway.
Yeah, Trash Can, much better.
All right, Trash Can.
Kind of reminds you of Fat Albert. Remember Fat Albert?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we're totally sidetracked. All right.
Yeah, but it's good fun.
Okay, Trash Can's kind of interested in this one because he has a Sony laptop.
It's Trash Can.
It's an article talking about Sony. They have recalled 18,000 Vio laptop computers globally. The world's largest consumer electronics maker also said that 3,000 Vio laptops it shipped... About 3,000 Vio laptops that shipped to the United States and about 2,000 Europe are subject to technical glitches, and the owners are entitled to a free repair. Basically, it has a tendency to shock you.
Shocking.
Oh, can I sit on it?
Let's leave that for our other show.
It doesn't vibrate.
Sorry about that.
It doesn't vibrate. It just shocks.
Can I have that on my head?
Yeah.
I definitely need some electroshock therapy today.
I could side note on that, actually, because I remember back in the early 1900s, they had all those products that shocked you, and nowadays, too, that build muscles, right? By shocking you get smarter by shocking certain parts of your brain. What is that procedure that's in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Jack Nicholas had that done to his brain? They thought
lobotomy?
Lobotomy. What a crazy thing. I would never...
Well, actually, electroshock therapy is still legal in 47 states.
You looked that up just before the show.
No, actually, that's a little nugget that floats around in my little head. And it pops out randomly.
Oh, man.
Little head.
Yeah, so...
Okay, it's gargantuan. I'm sorry.
If you have a Vio laptop, I would definitely check into that and get that taken care of, because that static discharge could... I don't know. I'm assuming that it could lead off and destroy hardware, possibly.
Tell them to tell Sony to repair it by giving you a Toshiba satellite. That'll be better. Toshiba's much better.
That'll fix it.
That'll fix the problem.
Okay. Well, we've moved through a whole barrage of different stories there.
I'm so addicted to data that now I'm already feeling the withdrawal. I'm having a little down here, and I need a new fix.
Well, now we're going to move into...
Can I punch you? Would that help?
No.
Yep. Oh.
No. Right. Now we're going to move into a segment that's going to talk about... I mean, we're going to encompass a few things here, and they're actually Microsoft stories. You guys ready?
We're ready.
All right. This is a story about the U.S. faults Microsoft licensing. And this is a bit of reading, but I'm going to read through the whole thing. Microsoft Corp. is taking too long to alter how much it charges competitors for technology that is necessary for the products to work with the software giant systems, the Justice Department told a federal judge. In a written report card on how well Microsoft is complying with its 2001 antitrust deal with state and federal prosecutors, Justice Department lawyers said they might need the court to force Microsoft to act more quickly. In other areas of the settlement, department lawyers praised Microsoft's compliance. Microsoft is required to make certain software code available for other firms to license on reasonable terms so their products will be assured of working in the system that uses servers, which are computers that provide networks for other computers. But many of the Microsoft competitors have accused the company of charging inflated prices and imposing astronomical terms for the code, thereby discouraging licensing of the technology, stifling competition, and taking advantage of the antitrust settlement. One condition that caused particular outcry was Microsoft charging for an upfront fee of $100,000 for rivals to examine the code to see whether they want to even buy it. But if they don't, then they get $50,000 back. The licensing provision was designed to ensure that Microsoft would not push companies into purchasing Microsoft server systems by making it harder for rival systems to work with Windows, the operating system that is on most individual computers. The department said it would give U.S. District Judge Colleen Collar-Cotelli a further update on the issue on the conference scheduled for July 24th. Microsoft spokesman Jim Dessler said the company continues to be open to making adjustments to the licensing program. The report notes that Microsoft already has made several changes to the licensing program at the government's urging. It goes on to say that all other areas of the agreement, Microsoft is in compliance. Right.
Yeah, I believe that one.
I don't know what to say anymore. I just don't trust Microsoft, so.
See, the problem is,
I've been violated too many times by them.
Well,
I don't want to know about that.
Well, look at it. Okay, look nowadays, like, let's just say you buy a product from someone. Let's just say you're a business, okay? And you buy something or a service from somebody else, and they don't deliver that service or the product, right? Let's just say you sue based on those terms. And then, let's just say that you win, and they say they owe you money. Well, what happens if they don't pay you?
Actually, then you can take out liens and other things. And
well, what happens if they don't decide to pay you anything?
Doesn't the government, like, force them to pay it in taxes, and then the government pays you?
Well, they can do that.
Something similar to that.
I don't know if it depends on the business model. I know that, in particular, with one company I know of, that they just didn't get their money back. And then you're like, hey, give me my money. Judge said give me the money. They don't give your money back. You know, there's so many things. There's so many loopholes, especially if you are so large. You can still dictate so many things. Even if they're like, you need to comply to this. You can comply to just enough. You know, and maybe they didn't word enough. You know, you could write thousands of pages to dictate how things should be done.
And then they'll come up with a completely different way
to screw you.
To do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a different way of interpreting the same thing.
Yeah.
So
certain words.
We haven't seen, I don't know, I mean, I guess there could be some things that they have done, but still, we know of.
It's also that kind of innovation and methodology, which has gotten them as far as they have.
Well, yeah, I mean,
has made them so successful. And so
they're the world.
Yeah, pretty much. They take it over. And
they're the pirates.
But, yeah, I mean, we know of another company that one of our friends works for that is just scared to death that, you know, Microsoft is going to go into their environment and try to be competitors with them. And they don't want that to happen. So I mean, it's I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later. This is another interesting article about Microsoft, and it's basically talking about Microsoft retaliating for people that support Linux. Massachusetts is investigating whether Microsoft Corp. retaliated against a computer maker for promoting a rival operating system, a possible violation of the company's landmark settlement with the Bush administration and 18 other states. Lawyers for the state told the judge in the antitrust case that they were investigating other complaints that Microsoft might have violated the settlement. Microsoft said that it was complying fully with the settlement. In a court filing made public, Massachusetts said that none of the allegations had been resolved, and it would move forward an enforcement path should its investigators identify provable violations. Massachusetts is the only state that has not settled in its antitrust claims against the software giant. Its lawyers did not specify which computer maker might have suffered retaliation for promoting Linux software. Companies promoting Linux in varying ways have included IBM, Dell, Sony. Of course, IBM is in the SCO suit. And so there's been talk of that, which is, you know, maybe not giving them fair deals, overcharging them for, it didn't say specifically in the article, but you can think of it up yourself, overcharging what they pay for the operating system, all the miscellaneous fees that they have compared to other vendors and general political movements, you know, that could be done. And I'm sure that they've done it. I mean, you've always seen in the past at Microsoft, and, you know, I'll have to say that there's other companies in the world, too, that do it. They have done everything they can to give themselves an edge, and I don't doubt that they would have not used that edge in this case.
I concur.
Okay.
Ditto.
So that's all these things are kind of things you can plug in. The information we're giving right now are things that you can plug in to the bigger picture, which, of course, is what the show's about. It's in the now. We're talking about what's going on now. And you know,
that's right. These are all little Legos of the Lego world.
Yeah. We talked about source code. We talked about people using Linux. We talked about Microsoft stake. We're talking about competitiveness. We're talking about all that, which, you know, all gets back to you, the consumer. And the reason, and we're going to talk about it, you know, we said it before, the reason that this is important is because it's becoming so integrated with your daily life. So,
and the better, more knowledgeable you are about what's going on in the world, the more, the better decisions that you can make that will affect you in for your benefit long later on down the road, or even right now. You know, it's time to start taking and being an active consumer and taking our liberty in our own hands.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, on top of this, if you run a successful software company or hardware company or any company that sells products to a mass market, you can you want to be competitive, but you want to respect, you know, the consumers as well. So, all right.
And for only $19.95, you can have our book that explains exactly how to get that competitor's edge.
No, nothing like that here.
All right, it's $19.99.
Not yet.
No, not never.
All right.
Never.
I'll scrap that manuscript.
Okay. But you can make your USB disco balls all you want there, VR.
That's right. My people are still working on that.
Okay.
Disco balls?
They're really, really, really slow.
All right. For everyone that doesn't know, a long time ago on another show, VR said he was going to come out with his little disco. You plug this into your USB port on your computer, and it's a disco ball, and there you go, a disco ball attached to your computer.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I am actually working on it. It's just...
It's being worked on.
I only have about 45 minutes of free time a day, so it's going to be a little while before I actually have a working production model.
Well, Slip Mode would love it. Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Right. You see all this stuff I have in my room. I have a modded keyboard now. I made the keys in the bottom light up.
I'll buy one from you if you make...
Wow. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah. You need a disco ball just to top off your whole club setting here.
This is my idea. And we're jumping off the side, but this is great because this is really neat. Anybody can do this if they have this piece of equipment, which kind of could cost some money unless you buy an older one. I had this idea. You know the Matrix screensaver, right? And they have a new one out, too, which is even neater. But you know the general idea. The Matrix, the numbers, the scrolling down the screen, it's green.
Yeah.
Okay. They have a new one that's like 3D and all sorts of stuff, and they do pictures and the numbers. The idea is, I got this from watching the Animatrix, and when you're at the menu screen, it shows like a cube, and you're inside the cube, and each side of each wall of the cube is playing one of the stories. By the way, if you guys may not have noticed, we used the Animatrix music from the DVD on the last show. But you could see the lines of text going over each box, each wall. And I thought that it would be really neat if you had a projector, and you know, sometimes you can get them for like $150, sometimes like $300, sometimes it's $1,000. Get a projector and shoot it on one of your walls in your room.
Yeah, It would be really cool, but I think after a while it could become maddening as you really, really start to actually like bridge that gap between, now, am I really seeing that? And then you have to turn off the projector, and then you go, okay, there's the wall. But now, really, is the projector like the red pill?
Whoa. Well, here's another thing, and I'm surprised I haven't seen it yet. Maybe because there were, I don't know, clubs. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Having a whole bunch of walls shot with that screensaver, wouldn't that be awesome? That would be sweet.
Yeah, that would be.
The Matrix Club.
Matrix Club. Well,
all right, let's start it.
We're doing it.
We're doing it.
We have come up with some pretty good ideas.
You know what? I really think this is a great little think tank, and I really think we just should start doing some of this stuff.
Yeah, so if anybody takes our ideas, we're going to kill you.
But we all need money.
No, we're just going to sue you for venture capital to produce our other goods. So please, please steal one of our ideas.
All right. We'll
I beg
it.
Of you.
But see, we all need money.
I'm going to kill you, though.
Wait. Later. Can you be our financial backer?
I sure can.
Okay.
All right. You know, first
he makes $7.50 an hour. You know?
Oh, wow, man. No. Are you a Googleplex?
I don't make that much.
Are you a Googleplex air now or what?
No, not quite.
But what do you get for overtime, man?
We're set. $1 million a day.
All right, we're going to do some of this stuff. All right. I'll quit my job tomorrow if we really want to do this.
Awesome. I'm not going to pay you to start this. You keep working, boy.
Yeah, he's
slave labor here.
He's going to give you your food and everything else while we develop the idea. Okay. Well, we talked a bit about the Xbox last show and previous shows. It's only getting bigger because they're only discovering more. Last week we talked about a new exploit that was going to be released that allowed you to fully defeat any Xbox security measure without even soldering anything to the board, without even opening up the Xbox.
Wow.
Hit cancel.
Control Alt Delete. No, it's I mentioned it last week, and I'm not going to read through it because it's way too long. Google it up. Google up Xbox hacks, or I think go to I think it's fulldisclosure.com, I think, and they will have the complete layout of how the hack works, and it's pretty clever. It basically uses the save memory cartridge to insert some code and get the job done. It's really long. It's a lot of reading. But Google that up and check it out. And also, there's another vulnerability that compromises the Xbox as well. There's a lot of stuff coming out. And basically, it's called the Xbox Dashboard Vulnerability, Local Vulnerability. And the application is a Microsoft Xbox Dashboard. And that's what happens when you boot up and there's no CD that runs. Vulnerability within the Xbox dashboard allows you to totally compromise security features of the Xbox. And basically, you can go through and do a few things there to get past all the measures. I mean, it's a lot of reading, but if you're really interested in that, check it out. Basically, the news is that the Xbox has been completely owned. That's it. It's owned. It's $180 Pentium 733 with GeForce 3 card, runs Linux, runs homebrew applications, runs a jukebox, has a huge hard drive. And on top of it, with this new, if you read through all the articles on the hack, or these two hacks, you'll find out that the only way to disable an Xbox from using Xbox Live, which is a lot. What Microsoft has been trying to do is at least disable, like, if you're a modder and you've modded your Xbox and all of a sudden you try to use our live service, they notice that you're a modded Xbox and they don't allow you to use it. Well, these new hacks basically allow you to be completely free unless they release a new Xbox using a new kernel.
Well, that's probably the next thing that they will do.
Yeah.
And you just told them what to do.
Well,
thanks, Slip.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of places that have, I mean,
turncoat
that have
loyalist
talked about. Yeah,
right.
Fathead.
That's too far, man. Okay.
Well, it is kind of big.
Yeah.
How do you think I you know, process all this information?
I'm not quite sure.
I'm gonna read this other story, and then we're gonna tie it back.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, I was just wondering. You know, it is getting late here.
Yes.
All right. Just letting you know.
Oh, I know all about that.
All right. Cool.
VR's got some plans he's got to take care of. Okay. Well, basically, this is a story about the Xbox being used in bases all over the world, the United States. The U.S. Air Force in Europe has dished out $200,000 to help build 17 online multiplayer Xbox gaming centers at 14 bases. You know,
this really ties into something that I was thinking about the other day. As I was talking to this guy who works for one of the big plane manufacturers, and he's working on a plane that's going to replace the F-16 when the Pentagon picks it up. And then the next one after that is going to be completely unmanned. You know, complete fly-by-wire from the ground. And one of the things when he told me that, the first thing I realized was, wow, imagine this. In 50 to 75 years, we could have all our 8 to 10-year-old kids sitting on the couch thinking that they're playing an intense video game and really taking over a country.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a movie on that, actually.
Oh, yeah. And that's completely possible. And here we already taken another step towards it where here's these little things outside bases where, you know, soldiers are pre-trained on the things that they'll be able to, you know, just pick it up later on down the road. And
yeah. I remember in the Now show probably 2 years back, I read something about that, and they talked about there's some dissemination between the two as far as the productivity as playing in a game and doing it in real life, is that by playing in a game, you're used to virtual entities acting in a virtual way. And playing it in real life is much more different. So the training that they get from the video game will not quite apply to real life, and there's going to be a moment of confusion and question there. So it's not quite viable, but at least it's a step, like a flight simulator for pilots before they start flying a large plane or a tank. Or
the controls will be the same, pretty much.
Yeah, just the controls.
So when you're born and you're playing video games, you could be actually fighting with the Air Force when you get older, just natural.
That's true, but also like Quake. You are actually playing against real people doing real things. It's not a virtual thing.
But it's within the construct of the game, which is limited, which life is obviously wide open for life, and it's not true to life complete.
That'd be funny if that's actually how war ended up in the future. Instead of people actually dying, they just went and like played an advanced version of Quake.
You know, that would be great.
That's almost sickening.
I got your country.
That's almost sickening. That's like how we don't base our money on gold anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's numbers.
It's like a perversion. It's not natural. It's, I don't know.
But at the same time, that would be really nice because then you actually go, you know, it's not who really has the military or the economic force can take over the world, but it's ones who have the skill and the mental cognition to.
But see, that's for the system we use right now already, though. We just don't use video games.
It is in a way, yeah.
But the thing I was going to lead to something with that, which is, I mean, you don't hear about Sony, you know. Microsoft got that big deal that we talked about last with selling all their software last show, talking about their software being sold to the United States military. They threw some Xboxes in along that. Of course, it's going to help them out in getting people, you know, used to playing their Xbox. That's how, you know, AOL got. You know, their customers sending out free CDs. So now, you know, Microsoft's getting some money out of the deal. And either way, what I'm saying is that I was talking to everybody to them before the show. And in a way, there's two parallelisms. I'm going to bring up one thing and I'm going to add another. I'm going to do it gradually because it's something to think about. In a way, Microsoft is a virus. And viruses usually become nuisances when they have the ability to be able to be a nuisance. Well, throughout And they usually want to go into a system and take it over and dominate it for whatever portion of that system they're designed to dominate. Well, we've heard about Microsoft. Like, if you install Microsoft and Linux is there, right? It's over the boot record. We've seen when, back in the day with the Internet Explorer fighting with Netscape, we had that problem. We have seen Microsoft screw with the little guys. We've seen that problem. We've seen, you know, now they get this deal and they put the Xboxes in. It's they're using every advantage that they can to be able to do that. And they sneak themselves in, and they viruses usually attack and destroy and or delete. And that's what Microsoft has done. They've attacked, they've destroyed, they've removed, they've given out your information. They've done all those things. Listen to that. Remember that. Now, it's the most susceptible operating system to viruses. Think for a moment. The way that Microsoft has integrated things together, ran all these things together, spat all their crap all over to gain dominance, are the exact same things to spread their virus, okay? Is the exact same things that virus makers have been using to spread their virus. In conclusion, Microsoft is a virus.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I was like, that's, I don't know. Everybody, listen to the show, I said it in the last show, please go to www.slipknot.org and check out the forums and leave your thoughts. That right there, I'd really love to hear people's responses on. Click on the In the Now forum. Click on the July 13th show and add your comments there. What do you think about that? I really think that's pretty interesting. Go ahead and send us an email, too, at slipmode@quest.net, and we'll definitely read it on the show.
Yeah, because that would be really neat to hear some of those responses, because there's so many parallels. Like, I was thinking about, like, Zion and the Matrix and how that parallels with that. There's infinite amount of others.
Yeah.
Are you going to start reading some of the comments on here? Once you get some good comments, you'll just, like, read what they wrote?
Oh, yeah. On the show? Definitely. Bring the feedback on the show. I mean, that's what it's all about. This is both for, you know, us and for the listeners out there. All right. Moving on here. Just VR, he's got an appointment that he might have to make. Just let me know whenever, but we're going to keep moving on. Okay. We're now going to get into our SCO section, and we're going to move along here. Okay, basically, this one is basically talking about, with all the threats of SCO going on, the lawsuits, they have just badgered the Linux community, you know, verbally and politically. Basically, it says here that most people aren't responding to it and really caring about it. Basically, people have just continued to get into Linux and move on. SCO's Linux lawsuit and threats seem to be having little effect on IT managers except to make them angry. Fully 91% of the people responding to the Internet Week reader question said that they will change their Linux development plans, that they will not change their Linux development plans as a result of SCO's actions. The result is overwhelming, and much of it is pretty angry. We received 217 responses to a question that we asked about 10 times in our normal response rate, which was asked about 10 times our normal response rate. We asked. SCO recently issued a warning to commercial Linux users threatening to sue over violations of SCO's intellectual property. SCO owns the intellectual property behind Unix. The company sued IBM in March, charging that IBM illegally used the source code and Linux distributions. On May 14th, SCO said the commercial users, too, could be liable for intellectual property violations. So do you plan to reduce your Linux development or eliminate Linux entirely from your organization as a result of SCO's threats? You could choose yes, we're reducing our Linux development, eliminating Linux entirely, or we're thinking about it, 9%. No, skull strets have no effect on our plans, 91%. Most of them are angry.
Right on. Well, I'm out of here, guys. You know, you all have a great night, and I'll chat with you all later.
All right. Thank you, VR,
yes,
for being on the
nice
show.
Nice chatting with you.
We'll definitely see you on the next show.
Hey, I get new headphones.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to move on to the SCO section. Kind of sad that VR had to go, but that's the breaks. Okay. Now, we're going to talk about... We talked about Microsoft was buying SCO licensing. Or not buying it, but they're also distributing SCO licensing through Microsoft. But something else interesting has come about in the news. A previously secret licensee of SCO's Group Unix intellectual property has revealed its identity. Unix leader Sun Microsystems' SCO Unix license plan got a major boost of publicity in May when Microsoft announced its decision to license Unix from SCO. But Sun actually was the first company to sign on. SCO and Sun confirmed the license deal on Wednesday, which was back in early July. The pact signed earlier this year expanded the rights Sun acquired in 1994 to use Unix in its Solaris operating environment. But there's more to this relationship. SCO has granted Sun a warranty to buy as many as 210,000 shares of SCO stock at $1.83 per share as part of the licensing deal, according to a regulatory document. Sun, the number one seller of Unix servers, declined to comment on the option to take stake in the SCO group. Sun's expanded licensing permits Sun to use some software under Unix System 5 Release 4 for software components called drivers, which let computers use hardware. And I'm sure everyone on the show knows what drivers do. Sun needed the software for its version of Solaris that runs on Intel servers. A familiar source with the deal said that the new contract was signed in February, but neither Sun nor SCO would commit to a comment. SCO, which hasn't had much success selling its own Unix products and which has pulled the plug on its Linux products, is trying to generate more money from its Unix intellectual property. The highest profile result of the effort has been the SCO lawsuit against IBM that alleges IBM misappropriated SCO code and trade secrets and violated Unix contracts.
What does SCO, what's their intellectual property?
Oh, I don't know if you're abreast of this, but the intellectual property is that they say that Linux has SCO closed source code in their model. Not in their model, but has been used. So what we're talking about here is some of the more players in the lawsuit and what certain companies have gained a benefit, and we're just bringing out all the information you know, as it comes out about SCO. We've actually talked about it for a few months. It's a pretty big thing going on in the community. Okay. I could go into a little bit more reading. Basically, the thing is that Sun has gotten itself okay with SCO, so it's not involved in this lawsuit, but I don't really think that was its primary intent. It basically has formed a tighter relationship and is... Linux is a threat to Sun, as well as Microsoft is. So they are, you know, they're definitely in a corner as well. SCO is not a very popular Unix product. They're looking to get some money, I believe, and this is what I talked about in the last show. We also talked about, could Linux actually have SCO code? Yes. But is it worth $3 billion? And that is all discussed in the last show. So I will leave it to the last show and move on with this new information.
This isn't... It's not version, like, you know, like Red Hat has SCO, but it's just like any Linux would have SCO?
Yeah, it's like it's code, and they haven't... Some people have seen it, but they're not allowed to tell after they've seen it. Code that's used in, like, the init system code used in just a general Linux kernel, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
There is a small discussion that this man had put together, and I wanted to bring that up. Basically, we're going to talk about all this, and we're going to reflect on a lot of the things we've talked about. It has these three columns, and one is likelihood, evidence, and what if SCO is right. And the subjects are above that. It says there is no infringing code, most likely. The evidence is SCO has yet to reveal any conclusive evidence that they can show their code that they have developed, which is now in Linux illegally. Further, various people, including Linus Torvalds, had pointed out that those areas of infringing code that SCO have publicly identified, SCO didn't develop anyway. IBM and others did. Torvalds specifically points this out for the code which implements RCU. The next thing talked about is SCO's released any infringing code. Proven. The full documentation evidence exists. SCO notified IBM of the infringing code problem. And for over 2 months after this event, SCO purposely continued to ship SCO open Linux source software, or source code, under the GPL. SCO, therefore, having donated any purported infringing code to the Linux community. So that's kind of interesting right there. Okay, and then this next one is, SCO deliberately released the infringing code to entrap Linux. Possible. Which is basically saying, did SCO kind of get this code into Linux's libraries, or, I mean, just code, period, and now want to sue based upon it? It could have happened. So that's another thing that people have been thinking about. SCO put Linux code into Unixware, which is software that is used across the board in many flavors of Unix. Very likely. And the evidence is, journalists have reported interviews with SCO staff that have made this direct claim. If so, then SCO, Unixware, may be subject to the license requirements stipulated by the GPL. Okay, sorry about that. SCO Unixware is actually only SCO. It's SCO's software, and it's saying, have they put Linux code into their Unixware? Which, it shows that journalists have reported that SCO staff has said that that's actually happened. And they're not using what you're supposed to be doing under the GPL, which is making that code available for others, and including the GPL license along with it. So that's some very interesting information. Lately, I mean, people have been coming out with all their, you know, small tidbits and reflections. It's kind of they're going through a thought process right now. Everyone's really trying to think about what's going on. Lots of, obviously, backroom deals are going on, but it's definitely moving along, and things are coming out about it. Here's a small article here on what Linus Torvalds had to say. He answered a few questions. I'm going to read one of the questions and one of the answers. The question is, the SCO group has sued IBM for illegally contributing Unix code to Linux. Do you believe this episode reveals any vulnerabilities in the open source movement? And Linus said, which is the founder of Linux, not really. Open source software is very visible. That means it's very easy to see if there is something wrong. I think that is a good thing. I think the whole point is that with the kind of transparency you get with the open source, people are a lot less likely to ever have intellectual property issues. I compared it to stealing a car. Would you steal a car in the bright daylight with a lot of people around? Or do you steal a car, go for a joyride at 4 a.m. in the morning when there aren't a lot of people around? With open source, there's a lot of daylight. A lot of people are looking at the code, and you don't really go around and steal things. So, reflecting there is basically, we've talked about a few things that you want to think about in the SCO Unix case. Has SCO used Linux code? Did SCO somehow try to get SCO code into Linux to start this whole lawsuit? Is it a backroom deal with Microsoft and Sun to try to stop Linux? You know, all these things are possible. So that is the SCO section of the show. But yeah, there's some things to think about. You see me kind of stutter because it's basically the information's out there and you're meant to put it together, and then from that point you'll end up making your decision. But we're just spreading the information as it comes out. Well, I think this is getting towards the end of our show. I hope you're able to follow through all the different things we talked about tonight. It was definitely a very convoluted yet filled with information show. And I think that is probably going to do it for the July 13th show.
All right. Why don't you end the show with some nice Alesis effects?
I think I'll do that. This thing's pretty fun. All right, that's our July 13th edition of the In the Now show. This is Slip Mode signing out. See you guys in 2 weeks. Make sure you hit up the forums at slipnet.org. And I'd like to see what other people think about my idea of Microsoft as a virus. All right, I'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
Hey, I'm Trash Can. All right, and remember, Microsoft is a virus. Oh!